hopefully Bezrat Hashem now going to at least complete seeing the words of Hilchot Deot. I don't like to say we're finishing the second parak, because if you think you're finished with this, then you haven't even started. Like, if there was ever a text that's worth reviewing, it's this that we're doing. We're in the middle of Parak Bet Halacha Zayin. Okay, and we talked yesterday about finding the middle ground between, you know, sort of too much levity and jolliness and being too serious, too much fun and too much sadness and seriousness, and finding the middle ground. And we said that the middle ground is simcha, because everything that has purpose leads to simcha, right? We're going to have, I hope, some levity tonight, but it'll be with purpose, so it'll be simcha. And second of all, we said that it leads to the ability to be mekabel adam b'sever panim yafot, to kind of receive everybody with a happy face, to, you know, start someone else's experience off. There's actually, I think it was Rav, but I might be getting it wrong, who was specific, makpid, right? That when he would see somebody, he would be the first to say good morning, to say hello, to shake your hand. That's a very good character trait, just as an aside. Like, when you see someone, you know, you be the first, you know? And by the way, if you end up back in New York next year, Rahmanul Itzlan, so this is a great game. It's a lot of fun, okay? To watch New Yorkers' faces when you turn to a stranger and you say good morning. Now, you can't put your hand out to shake your hand, because New Yorkers don't like to touch people. They got this thing going on. I don't really get it. I've experimented with this on the subway. People think you want money. They've got all these manipulative mind games going on in their head. So if you walk over to a stranger and say, hey, good morning, like this, he's going to be checking his wallet. It doesn't work. But if you look at a New Yorker and you just smile and say good morning, you get this every once in a while, this like surprise. Like, you're not supposed to do that. I don't know you. Sometimes people actually say, I've been in an elevator going up to like some business meeting, and some guy gets in, and I just say good morning with a smile, and then they look at me and they say, do I know you? Like, you're not supposed to say good morning, right? Sad that society has gotten to that place, but you can have fun with this, okay?
The smile and nod.
Well, that's low-key. The smile and nod is low-key. If you're daring and you're willing to go out on a limb, you can actually say something nice. I know that's effort, but you know, it might be food for thought, worthwhile.
In the suburbs, it's much easier than the city.
Pardon?
The suburbs, you're walking down the street and you say good
it
morning.
It is a little easier.
It's like the normal thing.
Right. It is. Yeah, you can take a train one day to a suburb where you don't know anyone, walk around and say hello to people and see what happens. That's interesting. The best thing, by the way, is at a traffic light. At a traffic light, someone's sitting next to you and you roll in and you say, hey, how's it going? And you have no idea they're there. And they're like, sometimes you'll go back, hey, how you doing? And you know that they're spending the next 20 minutes wondering if they know you, right? Okay. Anyway, but now we're up to the middle of Halacha Zayin. V'chein lo yiyeh bal nefesh rechava. Now, bal nefesh rechava literally means a broad soul. What it means is someone who wants too much. Like, the nefesh is that aspect of our personality that's related to desire. Like, you meet sometimes people, they're just, you know, they can't sit down to a meal and have one burger. They got to have eight. You know, anything they do to extreme. Okay? This is the guy who's always walking around with stuff dripping out of his mouth. And it's not just food. Any other type of, you know, physical activity. Right? You shouldn't be too greedy. Want too much. Right? Nivhal lahon, where you sort of, you're, be'alah is like rushing or you know, energy, right? Just running after money. You meet people, that's all they focus on. They're just thinking about stuff. There used to be this t-shirt, whoever dies with the most toys wins. That's actually not true, because they have no use for you. So that means you're, well, I'm not going to fill in the adjective. I'll let you do that. V'lo atzevu batel m'mlacha. But you're not supposed to either be, you know, sort of so determinedly avoiding sort of physical labor or work or the pursuit of wealth either. That's not healthy either, right? And I had a guy once who came to Israelites, and I don't even remember what the class was, but I was getting a class, probably had something to do with family and parenting, and it was clearly pushing his buttons. Like, he was just going through this struggle. And at one point, this is like a 40-year-old, 50-year-old gentleman. And he was clearly a successful guy. I mean, he dressed for success, and he was a businessman, and he had just completed selling off his company or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. And so he now had finally some time to take off some time. And he had sort of been thinking about, you know, that he was missing something in his life, and someone suggested to him to go to Israelite. And so he came to us for, like, a seminar. And given this class, and I see that his eyes are starting to water. Like, there's something going on, you know? For some reason, when people come here, you guys aren't really sort of within that context, because you're not really leaving your context, your environment, to the extent that these people are. Here's a guy who's in a totally different environment. He's never really been involved Jewishly. He can't even necessarily read an Aleph Beis, and all of a sudden he's sitting in the Old City of Yerushalayim and he's studying Torah. So that's like a radical departure from where he's at. And very often when, you know, people study things, just all of a sudden the stuff that they've been bottling up just comes out, you know? We had a girl once who burst into hysterical tears in the middle of a class that had nothing to do with anything, just because she had lost her mother a year earlier. And during the course of the year, she just never had a time to mourn. Like, her family wasn't a traditional family, so she was in the middle of some sorts of exams for medical school, and it was her last year of medical school, and she had to go straight back to exams, and then she had to go to some internship, and it was only finally a year later she was able to take some time off, and she came, and basically all the stuff she bottled up just came out. So this guy was like that. So I walked over to him after class, said, "Looks like something pushed your buttons, you know, if you want to chop a shmooze." You know, I teach them those Yiddish words right at the beginning. So we end up sitting in my office, which used to be over there, and we're talking. He just starts to lose it. He says, "You know," he says, "I started from nothing. I had nothing. I grew up with nothing. I had nothing. And I was determined that my kids shouldn't sort of have to struggle like I struggled. So I worked really hard to build up a business. And I got so focused on work. And the reason I was so focused on work was for my kids. I just wanted my kids to have what I never had. But I got so focused on work that I forgot what the point of the whole exercise was." He said, "A year and a half ago, I missed my son's college graduation. So we had this huge deal, and I had to be in Japan, and this deal was going to be the deal that finally got us to where we're going to go. It was basically doing something with his company. It turned him into a multimillionaire. I don't know exactly what was going on. I haven't stayed in touch with him. And I had planned this, and this was all set. And then it turned out my son's college graduation was then, and they couldn't do the meeting any other time. So I missed my son's college graduation. And it hit me." And he said, like, I spent so much time doing this for my children that I lost my children. He said, I have almost no relationship with my kids. My wife and I are divorced. He got so stuck, so focused on that he lost sight of what it was all about. Right? I personally hold, like, it's just my opinion, that, you know, the safeguard against getting too stuck in that is actually Shabbat. Like, no matter how deeply involved I get in a raita, at the end of the day, when Shabbos comes, I'm home with my family most Shabbatot, and, you know, it's like a pesek zman. You can't do your email on Shabbat, and you can't answer your BlackBerry, and you can't pick up your phone, and you can't do any work. You're just doing learning and whatever it might be, right? But that's where this guy got stuck. And it's an interesting question. You know, the halacha goes on to say, right? Ela bal ayin tova, ma'et be'ezek ve'osek b'torah. A person should be of a good eye, and he should have less to do with business, and more to do with Torah study, right? Ve'otoa ma'at shehu chalko yismach bo. And whatever he has, whatever little piece that he has, that's what he should see as his purpose. Like, most people interpret this line and they just think this means be happy with what you have. But what does it mean to be happy with what you have? If you take the Rambam's definitions, we've said before that the Rambam sets up definitions and then he uses those words consistently, right? So if you think about what this means, that he should be sameach, he should be happy with the small portion that he has. So what do you think that means?
You should have someone to do it.
Pardon? Okay. Well, let's say you don't have a relationship. Listen, not every person who is 18 years old today is necessarily going to get married. I mean, lo aleinu, it's a painful thing, but someone, of all the people you know who are 18, someone will still not be married statistically when he's 40 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old, which means that someone is going to have a certain pain in his life. And yet, the Rambam doesn't say, be sameach b'chalkacha if you find the right person, if you get married. The Rambam doesn't say, be sameach b'chalkacha if you have a business and it gives you a modest livelihood. Like, what if you're poverty stricken? What does that mean? He says, v'otoha ma'at shehu chalko. The little piece that is his portion. What if a person doesn't have a little portion? Well, what if a person has no, what if you spend the next 15 years and you can't get a job, and you can't find a wife, lo aleinu, chas v'shalom, and you can't find a wife, and you have no friends, because, I don't know, you have a body odor issue, whatever it is. That person too, he should be sameach b'chalko with the little chalak that he has. So how do you understand that? It's not complicated. Nope, I don't think that's what you do with it. If you're so busy thinking that this world is a transition to the next world, which is an important idea, and we'll actually get to that, then you think this world isn't important. That's not true. Hashem created you, put you in this world, so right now this world is important. The idea that this is a vehicle, that's valuable. But what does it mean to be sameach b'chalko? What does it mean to be happy with your small portion?
Realizing that this is the way Hashem meant it to be, so that any portion you have is fine, because that's exactly what is meant to happen.
If the definition of simcha is purpose, then whatever you have for a reason. Like, I can't tell if a person is single today, and he's 35, and he really wants to be married. So hopefully, Bezrat Hashem, he'll be married tomorrow. But he's not married today, which means today, he's not meant to be married. So if there's a purpose to that, if he can figure out what that purpose is, even the struggle to figure out what that purpose is, that's what gives you simcha in your life. You know, too many people are struggling with the paradigm that they want. Somebody came over to me last week, and he was asking me, we were talking, and he said, so is this year different from how you envisioned it? I said, absolutely. He said, really? I said, yeah. I was sure it would be different than, I didn't know you guys. Of course it's going to be different. Every year is going to be different than how I envisioned it to be. So, you know, we were talking about that. Like, so some people get stressed about that. They expect this and they want that. They get married and they think that once they're married, it's going to be X. There's no way that you can anticipate what it will be like when you're married. You can't. There's no way you can have to. I remember I saw so many army movies, and I went running for a year before I went into the army. And I thought I had my older brother was already in the army. I thought I had a handle on it. I landed in the army. By the second day, I realized I had no idea what I was doing. It was so different from anything I could possibly imagine. Some of you have met Zach. So Zach is going into the army, right? Levi's older brother is going into the army in March. And he's with in Otniel, and he's with guys who are going into the army. He's met guys who've gone into the army. He's done all this talking, whatever it is. I guarantee if you talk to him at the end of his first week in the army, he will tell you it is so different from anything I could possibly imagine. And that's true with everything. Like, think about your experience now. We're sitting here in December. This has to be very different from what you envisioned. In some ways, it's exceeded expectations. In some ways, it doesn't meet up to expectations. So some people struggle with that. They're always worrying, struggling with, like, you know, I wanted this, I have that. And some people say, well, if this is where I'm at, then today this is where I'm meant to be. Right? So what prevents me from experiencing that? And that's where you get to the second part of this halacha. Right? But we'll get to that in a second.
Being in the moment.
Pardon?
Talking about what prevents you from being.
Well, what prevents you from having simcha? Okay? V'lo baal ktata, don't be an argumentative person. V'lo baal kina, don't be a jealous person. V'lo baal tavan, don't be a desirous person. V'lo rodef achar hakavod, don't run after honor. Kach amru chachamim, akina, ve'atava, ve'akavod, motzim t'adam min alam. There are three things that remove you from this world. Now we're going to have to get to what it means to remove you from this world. But before we go there, what are these three things? What does it mean to be a baal ktata? You ever sit at a table and somebody has an opinion? In fact, I actually know that you've had this experience, some of you, at least at a raita. You're sitting at a table and somebody has an opinion and someone disagrees. And somehow, within 3 minutes, there's an argument going on. And somehow that argument gets so extreme that people get upset about it. So what's wrong with that picture? What's wrong? No names. What's wrong with that picture? What's wrong with that picture is that someone allowed themselves to have an argumentative experience. It takes two people to have an argument. Agreed? And by the way, it does not take two people to have a war. Like, you know, if someone attacks you, someone walks in, you could say, well, it takes two people to have a fight. So if somebody starts a fight with you, don't fight back. Right? Judaism does not believe in extreme pacifism. Right? Habala hargecha, if somebody comes to kill you, you have to get up to kill him. Right? Guy walks in here with a machine gun. The last thing in the world that I want to do today is chas v'shalom to have to take someone's life. But if somebody walked in with a machine gun and I was sitting here with a pistol, then that's what you would have to do, right? I mean, assuming he opened up on it, right? I mean, if somebody walked over you in the street and he, you know, started beating you up, you'd have to do something. You have to protect your life. That's reasonable. But when you're sitting at a table and someone wants to have an argument, you can decide, I'm just not having an argument with this person. And if everything that's up until the end of Perek Bet is accurate, and if you, you know, sort of know moderation with all your different character traits, and if you've distanced yourself from anger, and you've distanced yourself from arrogance, you can't get into an argument, right? And there's certain people, and look, everybody's human. If somebody really wanted to get me into an argument, I'm sure you could. But it would be more difficult, right, to get some people into arguments than to get others. And that's ktata. Don't be a bal ktata. How do you avoid being an argumentative person? Want to take a guess? This is a theme here. Want to take a guess? How do you avoid being an argumentative person? You're sitting at a table. Pick a position that you feel strongly about.
Just argue about it.
No. Pick a position that you feel strongly about.
A position I feel strongly about?
Yeah.
Israel.
Okay, so you're sitting back in college, okay? And Muhammad is sitting at the table. And he says, I don't know how you could spend a year in an apartheid state like Israel. I happen to know that soldiers regularly go into Palestinian villages and rape women. So that's a pretty extreme position. And you will, depending on which university you're at, you will hear things like this, right? And if you have a reasonable sense, so you'll know it's ridiculous, but it doesn't matter. So he's talking, and you're getting fired up. Okay? How do you avoid having an argument?
You still have to say something back to that because it's not true.
Stating a position is not the same as having an argument.
Yeah.
You can state it.
When you don't take it personally.
Pardon?
When you don't take it personally.
Well, it's pretty personal. Somebody's saying that my country and my state. Pardon?
Right.
So the first thing is you don't get angry. You can't have an argument if you're not angry, right? Then it's a discussion. Second thing is not arrogant. It's actually not about you. It's not about you. This person has a position. It's about who's at the table. What's the automatic question that you're going to ask? And I think this is a habit to get into. Okay, so why am I meant to be hearing this? Why am I meant to be sitting at the table? You know, there was a year I was in Gush. They offered an anti-missionary course. It's fascinating stuff. And basically, it stopped because one of the rabbis there got fed up with seeing New Testaments all over the base medrash. But for a year, we studied like all these makaros, all these first from the Gemara and the Mishnah, whatever. Then we studied the New Testament, whatever. And this teacher was an amazing guy, and he was really a taskmaster. And he would sort of grill us on this material when we came to class. And if we didn't know it, he would kick us out of the class. But the guys who stuck through the course really learned a lot. So, you know, when I would go back to America after that, I thought like I had some content to bring to the table. But I made the decision. I had an experience once, a longer story, but I was on the subway and I heard this missionary preaching stuff, and it was clearly sort of stuff that just made no sense with Tanakh. And I basically got into a debate with this person. I didn't get into an argument, but I got a debate with this person, right? So you tell the person, well, you know, if Yashka is the, you know, if Yashka is descended from King David, right? So that means that he must be the son of his father. But if he's born of Immaculate Conception, then he's the son of God. Then he's not the son of his father. So he's not descended of King David. And then you talk to this person and says, well, you know, but Isaiah 53, Yeshayahu Nun Gimel, says that we are the suffering servants. And now if you look at Isaiah 53, B'ni B'chori Yisrael, the suffering servant is the Jewish people. Well, but what about the Paschal Lamb? They've got like these 8 or 9 arguments, and they go, it's like a record, right? And as soon as you get to one, and this person realizes that they go to the next one. And after about 40 minutes of this, right? We basically got to the last discussion, right? And then they just went back to the beginning and started over again. It was like a record player. And I realized afterwards that this person was programmed. And so from then on, I would never get in discussion with these missionaries just to have a discussion with a missionary. My question always was, why am I listening to this? And I would look around the audience. And if I would see Bemet that there were some Jews, and it looked to me like these Jews were not just, you know, the YU guy who's curious, but somebody who might be influenced, so then it's worth having a discussion. But you're not having that discussion because you're attempting to convince the missionary. Because you won't convince a missionary, a real missionary, a person, especially someone who's in something like Jews for Jesus, which is actually closer to a cult. You're not going to change their mind. You're not going to be, they're programmed. But you might have an impact on the person standing there. And how is it that you avoid an argument? Because if you get into an argument and you get heated, and some missionaries are actually trained to get you into an argument, because as soon as you're arguing and you're frothing at the mouth, then they've won, right? How do you avoid that? Because you're asking yourself, well, what's the purpose that I'm here? Why am I having this discussion for the person over there? So then, of course, you're not going to get into an argument, right? It's all the same theme, right? Klalo shel davar, and what's kin'ah? Kin'ah is such an unhealthy trait. Kin'ah literally probably is closely approximated by the word jealousy. So there's certain types of jealousy that people understand, right? Like you understand that if your friend has a new shirt and you're so jealous about it that you get angry at him because how come he gets to have a new shirt and you don't? So then that's like kindergarten, right? But we have all sorts of jealousies that we don't even realize. You know? Like, I could see that there's going to be a pattern every year that there's certain, you know, types of students that struggle with this. And I don't judge a person. Like, you come here and you're where you're at, and hopefully the process of this year is to get you to think about these things and what you do with them and how you deal with them. That's up to you. And, you know, maybe sometimes this, you know, we can give good advice, whatever. But inevitably, I'm going to get into a discussion, well, how come you're asking me to X when you didn't ask Y to X? Or how come I have one piece of bread and he got two? Or how come you get into this zone? And there's three types of personalities I've noticed. There's the personality, they don't even talk about this. They don't even think about it. It's just so silly. Like if I got a piece of schnitzel and someone else got two pieces of schnitzel, so they got two pieces of schnitzel, it doesn't bother me because I got my schnitzel. Some people, they realize that there's a certain lack of maturity, so they won't talk about it, but it bothers them. Some people actually talk about it. You know, how come you, what is at the root of that? Kin'ah. Sometimes you're jealous of someone, not because you want it, but just because they have it. Right? So, kin'ah is the second thing that takes you out of the world. Okay? And the third is to be bal tava. To be someone who just wants stuff. You're greedy for things. You know what I mean? Like, I read an interesting article once. When you eat, okay? In fact, somebody here, I think Kobe was telling me, that there's a statistic that if you eat in the first 30 minutes of the day, that your brain is too tired to actually make you eat more, so you just end up naturally eating what you need to eat, and it carries you to lunch. I don't know if that's true, as I said, but I will tell you that if you eat, and you know more or less what a healthy portion is for a person, and then you wait 15 to 20 minutes, that will give enough time for the messages of the digestive system to travel through your neuron and the nervous system to your brain so that you will feel satiated. But if you've just eaten a full burger or whatever your meal is, and you don't wait 15 minutes, you'll eat much more than you need to. That's like a klal. I'm very good at preaching this. Whether I'm good at doing it is another question, right? But so what happens? What happens is that we want too much stuff. Now, what's the big deal if you want an extra burger? What's the big deal if you want more clothing? I've met people who spend a significant portion of money on things that they just don't need. This is a Western illness. People get stuff that they just don't need. You know, I'm not lacking for clothes, right? But, like, I've got my clothes and I'm 46 years old. I don't need to buy more clothes. If a shirt rips or a couple shirts get ruined, so then I need to get another couple shirts. But there are people who are buying new clothes every year. How much clothes do you need? Think about it. You don't really need it. You just want it. So what's the problem with wanting? So listen to this idea, okay? And we'll finish with this. Rav Chanan Wasserman asks a really good question. I want you to know this idea was a paradigm shift for me, okay? And I'm still processing this 15, 20 years after I first saw this. Rav Chanan Wasserman, I'll leave you with a question because this would take us another 20 minutes and I want you to have morning seder. But maybe this afternoon we'll get to have this thought before we go back to Hanukkah light. Rav Chanan Wasserman asks an interesting question. The Rambam says at the beginning of Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, he also says at the beginning of the Sefer Mitzvos, Mitzvah Gdola Ad Ma'od Leidash Yeshem Allah. There's a mitzvah to know that Hashem exists. Okay? There's a mitzvah to know that Hashem exists. You're obligated to know that Hashem exists. So ask me an obvious question. Pardon? Well, I know that Hashem exists. You can know that Hashem exists.
But if someone doesn't believe that Hashem exists, how can you exist?
Right. How can you have a mitzvah to know? That's ridiculous. Right? So Rav Chanan Wasserman asked this question. Like, belief is a psychological state. If you already believe, so then you don't need the mitzvah. And if you don't believe, having a mitzvah is not going to help you to know this, right? So he gives an answer which is so out of the box from the way I always thought of this. The way I always thought of this is that the mitzvah is, you know, that we've talked about dat, right? Vayedah Adam et Chava Ishto, Adam knew Eve in the biblical sense, relationships, right? And he had Cain and Hevel. That the mitzvah is to get to know Hashem, to struggle with the relationship. And that always made sense to me. He has a totally different way of looking at this. He says, if there's a mitzvah, it can't be that Hashem would give us a mitzvah that we're not all capable of fulfilling, right? If Hashem says that you have a mitzvah to put on tefillin, that means every person is able to put on tefillin. Someone who has no arms is patur. He's not obligated in tefillin because he can't fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin, right? So if you have a mitzvah, you're able to fulfill it. If a person doesn't believe in God, he can't fulfill the mitzvah. So Rav Chanan says, therefore we know that everybody believes in God. Everybody believes in God. Everybody doesn't believe in God. He says, it's not that they don't believe in God. And I tell you, This is Rav Chanan's. I should, by the way, mention one just caveat. It's important in this case to know where and when Rav Chanan was having this discussion. Rav Chanan Wasserman was a Talmud Chaver of the Chafetz Chaim. And he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Baranovich. And he sent his students to the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim sent his children to the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim sent his grandchildren to Rav Chanan. And he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Baranovich, was right outside of Kovno. In World War II, he ended up in the ghetto in Kovno. And the experiences of Rav Chanan's Talmidim in the ghetto in Kovno are already stuff of legends. He was murdered by the Nazis in 1941. He was actually murdered because he was caught giving a secret shiur in Gemara. They were studying Masechta Nida in a basement, and it's a longer story, but basically they were taken to the Ninth Fortress, and he was murdered. And he's famous for a series of just incredible chedushim called the Kovetz Chedushim, you know, novel ideas on the Rambam, on Shas. He's less known for something called the Kovetz Ma'amarim, a collection of articles. And these articles were speeches and sichot, Musar Shmuzes, that he gave in the Kovno ghetto, which were published posthumously after his death in 1948, 49, something like that, by his students, 50. And this is one of those discussions. So he's having this discussion with his students in the Kovno ghetto. So first of all, you can understand how the topic comes up, because how can you believe in God in the midst of the Kovno ghetto? On the other hand, we're obligated to believe in God. So he has a fascinating idea. He says that everybody knows that Hashem exists. But there's something that prevents us from accessing the knowledge that Hashem exists. He says, what is that? He says, you're born with an intuitive knowledge that Hashem exists. He relates this, by the way, to the intuitive sense of right and wrong. Everybody has an intuitive sense of right and wrong. You know something's wrong because it's wrong. But you can't really prove it's wrong. You just know it's wrong. And that's your neshama, right? You know what love is. You know what beauty is. So he says, there's something that prevents you from knowing that Hashem exists. What is that? That is what he calls mother's milk. You're born, and a few seconds after you're born, your brain triggers a response, and you know that you're hungry. So what does a baby do when it's hungry? It has an instinct. It starts to scream. Well, the baby screams. It wants milk. What does mumsy do? She stops him, and she starts to give him milk. And very soon, the baby learns that when I want something, all I have to do is scream, and I'll get it. And that means that I'm in control. And when a person starts to struggle with the existential questions that include the question of God, right, in their psyche, they instinctively know that in order to accept that Hashem runs the world, in order to accept that there's something bigger, that there's an objective good and evil, I have to be willing to give up control. It's a hard thing for some people to do, right? Some people have an easy time. I love the fact that I know I'm not in control. That's okay. I'm in control of the fact that I'm not in control. But some people really struggle with this. Because there's this idea, and this is especially true in Western society, that if you want something and you work hard enough, you'll get it. Judaism says you shouldn't necessarily get everything you want. And sometimes it's good that you don't get what you want. And sometimes you need to re-examine what you want. That tava, that desire for the stuff that isn't necessarily always good for you, right? That pulls you out of the world. That pulls you out of the real world, the world of reality, where you understand that Hashem runs the world. And that's really what the Rambam is talking about here. For Hu Shlomo Amar, Pales, Ma'agal raglecha v'chol drachecha. Right? A person should, klalo shel davar, the rule is, yelech b'midah benoni, follow the middle path, shebechol daya v'daya, with every character trait, ad shiu kol dayotav mechuvanot b'emtzaut. Until everything is in the middle, and that's what Shlomo HaMelech said, pales ma'agal raglecha v'chol drachecha ikonu. If you flatten the ground under your feet, you'll have an easy time walking. So this, at least, allows us to feel the illusion that we've concluded the second chapter, Perek Bet, and B'zrat Hashem, after Hanukkah, we'll get into the third Perek, Perek Shlishi. And if anybody has questions about this, feel free, you can fire away over the course of the day. Have an awesome last day of learning before some Hanukkah vacation, and we'll resume Hilchos Deos. By the way, next week, I'm going to be in the States for a week again, unfortunately. And we'll be back the week after. So when we leave the Mesiba tonight, I won't see you for a week. So a week and a half. Because you're on break, and then I'm in the States, and then I'll be back the following week. All right? Don't be so depressed that I'm leaving you. I feel in the love.